What's up, friends? I'm Maddie, and I am trying to manifest cooler fall weather by wearing sweaters in 90-degree heat.
And I'm Reebs, and I am currently in physical therapy to recover from my acute case of tennis elbow that I got while working out during COVID.
And we're the Oh God Podcast.
We are a faith-based podcast that seeks to create space for people to come together and ask questions. We firmly believe that faith is not black and white and that there is room for discovery and living in the gray areas of life. So if you are looking for an affirming and inclusive faith community where you can talk about things, welcome. This is your space.
Yeah. Welcome to a faith community that redefines faith in a world that isn't as black and white as the church may make it seem. Reebs.
Hello.
What did you do to your elbow? This has been going on for months.
I know. Okay. Well, so I kind of like mentioned it maybe a few episodes ago, but I hurt it in February. Did nothing. Just stopped working out. Actually, no. I kept working out and I was like, just push through it. Obviously did not get better with that attitude. Stopped working out in March. In April, thought it was healed, worked out again, hurt it again. And all summer just iced it, wore a compression sock. So anyways, I figured it's finally time to go to the doctor. So I went to the doctor and now I'm in physical therapy. Although he said, it's looking good. So I think I only have like a week left maybe. I have to do all these little like exercises where I like stretch it. And then there's this one where I have to like hold a hammer and like rotate my wrist around or like I have to use those little athletic bands.
Yeah. Wow. See, this is why people don't exercise. Mm-hmm. You do one workout, you get tennis elbow for a year.
Mm-hmm. See, I was I had just been bragging too, or like thinking about the fact that like, wow, I've never really like had any injury. Like I'm just not very injury prone.
You can never speak too soon. Yeah.
I broke my head open one time when I was really little. I like landed wrong in the pool. But outside of that, never broke a bone, nothing like that. So yeah, I guess that's what I get for trying to be healthy during COVID. But I'm excited. I've been so restless because I really was in the habit of like working out every day and then obviously couldn't do that with everything. So I'm excited to at least be able to be active again without worrying about being hurt. So
yeah. Yeah, that part is fun. I found a gym by my apartment that I really like.
Nice.
And so I've had a lot of fun going to that. And I've started working with a personal trainer.
Okay.
I'm trying.
I'm looking into that.
I am just out here trying to get jacked. Okay. I want to be just so swole.
I just thought of that crab character from, or Lobster Larry from SpongeBob.
That's going to be me. Uh-huh. Okay. Not really, actually. Yeah. I was like, give me something sustainable, but also teach me how to use the machines in the gym because I don't know how to use them. And it's very intimidating.
It is.
And so I really like it so far. I'm probably, my goal is to like work with someone for like 3 months and get a feel for how to do it and then see if I can do it on my own.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That sounds cool. I love that for you.
So fit. I'm also hoping this helps me avoid injuries like tennis elbow.
Yeah.
Because if someone else tells me what and how to do.
Because I had been so, I was always very good about like, I do a lot of yoga with Adrienne, which is like an amazing YouTube channel, but she always talks about like being mindful about like where your elbows are and where your knees are. And if anything hurts, like don't do it. And so I feel like I'm typically fairly mindful when I'm working out. Although, I think having someone else there that's like more knowledgeable would have been helpful.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had a sleepover last night.
It was like my first sleepover as an adult. Yeah. It was so much fun.
It was really fun because all of your dogs came over. So we had four dogs in the house.
It was literally, so my dogs are the small version of your dog. It's like the same dogs in different fonts. They're just,
they really look identical. We went on a, so my second dog, Gecko, he, we haven't seen him interact with a ton of dogs. So when Maddie got here yesterday, we went out and tried to take them on a walk to like get them to interact or whatever. But anyways, we were like walking around our neighborhood and this one woman was like, wait a second. Because literally I'm walking like my golden retriever and Gecko, who's slightly smaller, and like Sammy's blonde and Gecko's black. And then we, Maddie's like right next to us with like Oscar, who's black, and then Maisie, who's blonde. And anyways, it was just like really cute because they are like the same dog, but just like a little smaller.
And it's weird that like Gecko in the mix makes them so calm.
Yeah. Normally not expecting that because he's the chaotic one in our house.
They were, when it was just Sammy, I brought him over and they freaked out.
They all, the three of them together was like so chaotic. So I was literally like, I don't know how this is going to go with all four, but I was nervous. Actually fine. Yeah. It really was. So,
It was great. And we finally got to finish the third season of American Horror Story. We've been working on that season.
Oh my gosh.
For like whole summer.
For way too long. Yeah. like we probably started American Horror Story like last fall. It took us forever to get through the first like two seasons. I don't even remember the second season now.
Is Asylum.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I guess we finished that one pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then, it took us forever to get through Coven. So we finally finished it.
Coven is my favorite plot.
Yeah.
Of all of them.
It was good. It was good. It was a little gory. And usually I don't mind gore, but I think every time we watch it together, we would also order sushi. So we're literally sitting there like eating sushi and like looking away from the TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't recommend that combination. Not a good combo. And I know that it doesn't get necessarily like less gory.
Yeah.
But I really think this season was just hard because of like the storyline.
Yeah.
Just makes it. Yes. Very
and with
gross.
Like Madame Lorelei or whatever. Yeah. Ugh, so creepy.
I know. Yeah. But I also think it would be really cool to have powers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Being all witchy. Mm-hmm. Speaking of witch. Speaking of witchy, witch. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Look at that. We're starting to pick up on segues together. Sandwiches?
Same.
That's what I was going to say.
Are we the same person? Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Today, we are talking about kind of this relationship between what people often kind of refer to as like witchy things more like new age spiritual type practices in Christianity and the relationship between the two, which I'm geeked about because I feel like I've been sitting in this weird intersection of those two things for like most of the last year and a half.
Yeah.
Trying to see how I feel about all of it. So.
Absolutely. And I feel like I've learned a lot more about it, honestly, since being friends with you, but also like, I feel like in some of my classes or I don't know, I'm just always very intrigued with like how mysticism and Christianity can overlap because I think that, I mean, like everything else we talk about, things are not necessarily like black and white. And so I feel like there is so much room for like intersection and overlap. So I'm really excited because I am all about like spiritual energies and just, you know, like
the moon has healing energies.
But then also,
but then also the
like still am Christian. And so I think that I'm very excited.
Yeah. And we don't have it in like the outline for specifically anything that we talk about. But I think in this conversation, one thing that I've come back to a lot is like the more I embrace environmentalism into my understanding of Christianity, the more open I am to a lot of these practices, especially with, you know, like crystals and things as we talk about later. Because I think like there's so many like spiritual things that happen out within the earth and within nature that we often write off within the church. And I think a lot of that ends up coming back around in some of this conversation.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
There's a whole tangent built in there about the earth and all the things. Absolutely. But So one of the reasons that this conversation kind of came up as something we wanted to talk about is because over quarantine, I started to get really interested in the relationship between practices like tarot or crystals or, you know, even like various forms of meditation and how that might play into my practice as a Christian. Mm-hmm. And what I really began to see were these two very kind of polarizing ends of the conversation or two very different ways of approaching it. One of the most prominent being that there's this massive Christian resistance to anything that appears even like remotely witchy or spiritual or anything like that, which I thought was kind of interesting, considering like the history of Christianity and colonization and the way that influences how we exist within other communities and cultures. And so that kind of got the ball rolling for me. I think some of the things that I've seen that have been kind of points that I've had to really work through have been spaces that feel as though our resistance to those things stem from a place of either appropriation or colonization.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll talk about it a little bit later as we talk through some like specific practices, but there are some things that Christians have like outwardly claimed resistance to that feels kind of almost contradictory.
Yeah.
You know, because some of the stuff that we do is very weird.
Yes. And has like a lot of spiritual like ritual around, like thinking of baptism
or communion.
Yeah, like there's a lot of spirituality and mysticism. You're doing it for the ritual of the thing and not like what you're gaining out of it,
right? You know? Yeah. So I think there's this interesting relationship that exists there, but I think a lot of our understanding of what the relationship is between Christianity and really those this like new age wave of spirituality really began when we started to see kind of this movement within Gnosticism.
Yeah.
And I know you have done a lot of the background on that. So
yeah. So one thing I've always been interested in, which I feel like to be honest, I've heard like Gnostic Christians and like Gnostic thought kind of thrown around when I was in some of my like religion classes in college, but didn't ever really, I mean, to be honest, that was when I still Maisie's very gassy right now. And poor so you baby. Can just like hear her little dog toots. And I can't.
It's okay. Like right behind me. So you're talking gosh. And yeah. all I hear is her mm-hmm. just
yeah, tummy grumbles. I just keep hearing her little grumbling. Okay. Anyways, but yeah, so I feel like I've heard sort of it thrown out, but to be honest, like I didn't really read some of my readings in college. So I never right. really knew specifically what Gnostics were about other than we weren't supposed to like them or like that early Christians uh-huh. didn't like them. So, but recently I've been doing a lot of research like for my full-time job. I work in college ministry and right now we're kind of doing a series on students are able to like submit questions and stuff and then we'll kind of like go through them. But we've been talking a lot about like early Christianity. So, and Gnosticism is like really wrapped up in that only because like when we think about how broad early Christianity was, I mean, there was such a wide range of beliefs. And like we think today things are very broad. Like when you look from like a Protestant church or like a mega church to like Ethiopian Orthodox church or like Methodist to Catholic, like there's just, it seems like there's such a wide range of beliefs. But like back then they did not have written down books. I mean, if you want to go back and listen to, we have like a whole two-part series sort of on the Bible, how it was canonized and then sort of like interpretations of the Bible. But they did not have like a written down canonized Bible. They just had different collections of books that like some Christian communities would read, others would read different ones. Others had access to different ones. There was no set orthodox or like universal sort of belief of what we should believe.
Right.
So Gnosticism was really used as this umbrella catch-all term to label, groups of Christians that other Christian leaders didn't like. So, just like a quick overview of some of the like beliefs of Gnosticism, but again, like Gnosticism, it is very hard to label it as one thing. Cause there are also groups of Gnostics that some scholars would say like, you know, you're not, it's not exclusively Christian, but then there are Christian Gnostics, but then even within Christian Gnostics, there's such a wide range. So it would kind of starts appearing within the late first century when we're thinking specifically of Christian Gnosticism. And it was a really various group of, they emphasized personal spiritual knowledge or gnosis above orthodox teachings, traditions, and authority of traditional religious institutions, which beforehand, Maddie and I were kind of joking that, like, honestly, if we look at that, like, valuing personal spiritual knowledge above orthodox teachings, traditions, and authority of traditional religious institutions, if we're going by that alone, I'd probably classify as a Gnostic.
I can see where, yeah.
I mean, there are some, so let me tell you a little bit about, like, some of the reasons they weren't liked in general. One thing is that there's this idea of like docetism or docetism, D-O-C-E-T-I-S-M. It is one of the really dividing issues between Gnostics from other Christian sects. And it is the assertion that Christ never died because they believed like the material world was evil and refused to believe that Jesus was like a fleshly incarnation. Instead, they claimed that he only appeared to have physical form from like in his existence and thus could never truly die. So he wasn't like truly in the flesh. Like that is where they really start to differ. And again, even within that, there were lots of schools belief
right
under everyone who was labeled quote unquote Gnostics. So some did believe that, others maybe not so much. Another big point of tension is that there were some groups within Gnosticism that believed that there was this like inferior God or inferior being that created the world, and how it wasn't really God but thought it was God. And so then that's kind of where we get all of the pain and like they're big on sort of like material world versus like spiritual world and how the material world, like our world in general, has a lot of pain and evil. And so that's sort of one of their beliefs as to why maybe the world itself is not good, is that it wasn't actually God who created the world but this like weird lesser inferior God maybe that created the world. And then that's sort of where we get a lot of our pain. And that's again sort of my loose, like if anyone out there knows a lot more about Gnosticism, please correct me.
But I think another way I've heard it too, and again this might not be totally correct, but I think it is, there's like that sub kind of force that created everything, and that the idea of like personal development or spiritual growth is to return us not back into relationship with that sub God that created everything, but back into relationship with Source.
Yes.
And so if we do enough on this earth that was created by something lesser, that we will then end up back in relationship with God itself.
A lot of Gnosticism and just mysticism in general kind of relates back to the how do we get connected to Source, to the absolute, to truth. So yes, I think I've heard that as well. So thank you for, So yes, that is just sort of in a nutshell what Gnostics believed loosely, and why the, especially sort of the big tension points as to why maybe some early church leaders didn't like them. But again, there was such diversity in the old, or sort of in early Christianity, like first through third centuries. And it's really in the second century when there starts to be a lot of tension. So this is when Christians started to be really highly persecuted by the Roman government. So there were a series of emperors who, you know, declared that they needed to be killed because they wouldn't, you know, pay their, they wouldn't do the sacrifices and the rituals that they were asked to do by the Roman government. So that's when they really started to be highly persecuted because the government wanted to put down any seditious movements. So Christianity was seen as a threat. So within the Christian community, this is the second century is also when we see this emergence of like bishops and hierarchy and there being more structure to church. And it's those leaders who start to see like how various groups within Christianity could become dangerous and then were labeled heretical. So they started to have a lot of tension with groups like Gnostics, where they believe like a very different teaching of who Jesus was versus maybe what eventually became the Catholic Church, where they believed Jesus was physically God, you know, physically God, also divinely man, like, you know, was both and, as opposed to being more of a spiritual representation. So this is when there started to be a lot of finger pointing of it seems like there was certain bishops who didn't like, they would say that, you know, Gnostics were heretics, but again, there wasn't a lot of definition on Gnostics. So really there were a lot of bishops who were just saying they didn't like Gnostics, but it's just really they're saying it about anyone whose theology they don't like.
Gotcha.
So it kind of falls all under Gnosticism. So there is a Greek bishop named Irenaeus who was 18 to 20 years old when let's Time pause out. With that a minute.
18 to 20 years
was
old.
He was in his like early 20s and was a Greek bishop. And he witnessed 50 to 70 people within his community get executed by the state of Rome. So it was this very tragic event that happened with his community. Very, very horrible, very traumatic, and that left that Christian community really grappling with a lot of issues. And Irenaeus saw this and really wanted to avoid any sort of fracturing or divide that could happen between Christians. So he wanted everyone to kind of unify together under one like theology, really. He was a big proponent of like sort of telling people what to believe versus like letting people believe a wide variety. Mm. He's also one of the people that was super vocal about having just the four gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Luke and John. Bye. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and out of here.
Also, I just learned this recently, but did you know Luke is actually written as Luke Acts? It's a two-part book. I didn't know that until recently.
Acts is the sequel.
Yeah, which is cool. So anyways, that's a...
But they're not put in the order where you would assume
yes,
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, so he was big on having the four gospels, and he was also pretty vocal about not liking Gnostics. He is one of the people that started calling them heretics. He also really did not like the Gospel of Thomas, which I believe we talked about a little bit in our canonizing mm-hmm. episode. So if you want to learn more about sort of the Bible being canonized, you can go back to our episode called How It's Made the Bible. And then the second one, or sort of the two-parter for that, is called The Gospel of Truth, question mark. So anyways, yes, he was very against Gospel of Thomas, very against Gnostics, believed people all needed to believe a black and white belief. And I kind of wrestle with that because on one hand, like, yes, he experienced sort of this very traumatic thing and wants mm-hmm. the community to come together, which I think in general, like, that's a very honorable notion to kind of right. want people to rally together and to not fracture based off of difference in belief. However, I think that maybe it went a little too far the other way.
Right.
So then we see Constantine, who was the Ugh. Emperor. I know.
Ick.
He was emperor, I believe, from like 304 to like, I don't know, early 3rd century. He was very successful general and fought this big war where he ended up being like converted. Like he saw this vision of like the cross and then ended up converting to Christianity. There's actually a lot of debate as to whether or not it's authentic. And I don't know if, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if the debate itself like really changes anything, whether or not he was Christian, but.
Right. Well, isn't he the one that put off his baptism until literally moments before yes. he died because mm-hmm. he wanted to be able to still wage war?
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think I did hear that. So I know that he, yeah, there's a lot of debate. Like, okay, James Cone, who's like a really renowned black liberation theologian, he, in one of his books says that Constantine making Christianity the like religion of the state was one of the worst things that ever happened to Christianity.
Right.
Because it made it this like power structure where Christianity could be used to like abuse other people. And yes, I believe that that's mm-hmm. true about Constantine. Like whether or not he was Christian, he still did some like really shitty things because yeah. like he believed he could. And then, yeah. you know, put off his baptism until the end. So, he put out a lot of propaganda about himself in the book or the writing called The Life of Constantine, where he painted himself as being God's chosen leader. He wanted people to see him as this like godly Christian, like pioneer of Christianity, really like championing the church. Mm-hmm. And he saw this big opportunity to unite the empire under one religion. So this is where things start to really shift in Christianity because he wanted Rome. Rome was on the outs. It was not doing well. It was in decline. And he saw this opportunity to rally everyone around one belief.
Yeah.
However, in order to do that, everyone actually had to believe the same thing, which early Christians didn't. So this is where we get Council of Nicaea, which again, we talk about that in our canonizing the Bible episode. But the big thing that this changes is Constantine forced really a black and white orthodox onto Christianity. So he made them come together and believe certain things like when Easter should fall, what's the divinity of Jesus? Like just essentially a list of things they believe, like in the Nicene Creed, that is from that sort of a list of beliefs for the faith. And this changes things because before we were more heterodox or having a wide variety, and now we're more orthodox, which is then again where we kind of see a lot of the finger pointing and yelling of heretics starting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is where a lot of, I feel like the distrust comes from Gnosticism is they were, everyone was kind of forced to get onto one page. And so anyone who didn't fall within that specific doctrine were called heretics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and what's interesting about that too, especially in kind of the standardization under Constantine of Christianity, is that that's where you start to see things get pulled from more like pagan traditions, the kind of the ostracizing of anything that is cultural in relationship to Christianity. So like, I know that there's a lot of conversation about why major Christian holidays like Easter or Christmas fall when they do.
Yes.
And most of it has to do with pagan holidays yeah. that fall at those times.
Yeah.
And even like the traditions we have, right, of like singing happy birthday and blowing out the candles, of putting up a Christmas tree and decorating mm-hmm. it, of the Yule log. Like all mm-hmm. of those are pagan
yeah.
rituals yeah. that have been consumed into Christianity, really in an attempt to make it appealing to those who are not yet in it, or to
yes.
vilify anyone who used those things outside of Christianity.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that is also, I think, an important thing to keep in mind in knowing all of this history, is the relationship it has to other cultures and system of beliefs, and that there was a form of Christianity yes. that was so open to interpretation
yeah.
That we have really kind of pushed out, which then impacts the way we view some of these other practices.
Yeah.
Which then kind of leads into like speeding up the timeline in the early 1970s and into the 1980s, mm-hmm. This New Age movement
yeah.
that begins to pick up and was really widely spread through more occult, metaphysical, and religious communities in that 70s to 80s range. And it really was this kind of broad system of belief that attempted to unite people under two kind of main ideas. The first was that it would be through this kind of heightened spiritual consciousness that we would have as a society
yeah.
that we would begin to see the end of things like systemic racism, poverty, sickness, hunger, war.
Mm-hmm.
It pushed this idea that through some of these movements, we would see this collective social transformation
yeah.
That would lead to a spiritual awakening that would transform the next generation.
I love that.
What I think is so interesting about uh-huh. that is like how closely that does sound to even like in Christian spaces, this notion of transformation,
yes.
creating heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm. Let's say it's like using different words, but the same thing. And even then, not even really that much of different words.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then the other thing is this idea that individuals could bring the New Age about faster with their own transformation. So there's that personal, like, if I do my work, we're going to manifest this to come faster. And if we all do it, it's going to come really fast because there's collective energy. Now, within this movement, and we don't talk about it a ton, but it also has its own offshoots that are very interesting,
mm-hmm.
that are definitely worth looking into. I think you see a lot of this like kind of cult-like following mentality with certain individuals come out of the New Age movement in the 70s and 80s. And so that is very much also a part of this, but kind of the broad overview is that those were the things that this collective movement was working towards.
Okay, cool.
And it is definitely noted that the strongest supporters of this movement came out of a religious perspective and an understanding of mysticism that is rooted in Gnosticism. So that's why know that,
uh-huh.
because so many of those understandings that got kind of translated into other ways ended up being foundational to the New Age movement.
Which I think that's so fascinating because I didn't know that connection between Gnosticism and New Age.
Like, I didn't either.
Which to me, I'm like, well, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Sign me up.
It's super neat. And it like, put me down for cardio. Don't really do that. I would hate every second of that. But within Gnosticism especially, it's where we see things like reincarnation, belief in astrology, belief in spiritual energy, physical mm-hmm. objects like mountains or trees. And what's also interesting about beliefs that fall into this New Age spirituality is you see a lot of belief across the board. Christians, non-Christians, other faith practices, no faith practice. Pretty much most people believe at least 1 to 4 of these things.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Okay. So the 4 things being reincarnation, astrology, physics, and presence of spiritual energy.
As part of it.
Okay. Part of it. Gotcha.
Yeah. There's a study we'll get to in a second that breaks it down more.
Perfect.
But yeah, essentially like there's a component of something that almost everyone buys into.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. But within the history of kind of the New Age movement in the 1970s, a man named David Spangler developed this fundamental idea of the New Age movement. And he was someone who thought that there would be this release of waves of spiritual energy that was marked through astrology. So as the Earth moved into Age of Aquarius, for example, that would change the energetic vibration of the Earth, which would bring about this new wave of collective understanding. And he thought that if we worked together as a group to elevate our vibration, that we'd get there faster, that we could somehow speed that timeline up. And he really was like a major builder of this movement. He wrote a few books like Revelation, The Birth of a New Age, and ended up kind of bringing in leaders from older occult and metaphysical groups to grow this thing that he had started. We also see leaders like Richard Alpert, who is now known as Ram Dass. And he ended up going and found enlightenment in India and then came back and began to disavow the drug experience and advocate for traditional spiritual disciplines. So he was also a big part of this. And I feel like he's the one I've heard of more frequently.
Yeah, I mean, I know his name. I know some of his stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So as this is happening, you see this integration of more traditional occult practices, so tarot, astrology, yoga, meditation, integrated as a way for people to engage their spirituality, and kind of made a bit more neutral. So you also start to see this pairing with psychology and academic disciplines, actually researching consciousness and seeing how those go together. And so then what you start to see is this understanding that a lot of these things can be practiced outside of some of the context that they were originally placed in, that there's a somewhat neutrality to some of these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a connection to culture, which is, I think, where you find that line of really needing to do your research and knowing what is neutral and what is appropriation.
Yeah.
Because it is such a blending of beliefs. But
yeah.
You see some psychology that goes into understanding how and why this is beneficial for people, which is kind of cool.
That is. That's really fascinating.
Frank Alpert was also a big crystal guy, which I think is not surprising and very interesting. And he definitely believed that when you engaged with crystals and you began to engage with the energy that crystals produced, again, that you could bring things about quicker. He also had this big thing about Atlantis, which is kind of interesting. Like him specifically, that crystals were like part of how Atlantis functioned, but it was the abuse of their power that led to its demise. And like,
interesting. You know, I feel like I need to know a lot more about Atlantis. I feel like as a kid, watch the movie, you always like kind of hear it around, but like, sounds cool.
That movie does slap
though. Okay, it really is. It's so
one of
good.
My favorite
so
animated
so
movies.
So good.
So good. So that's kind of the start of this, but there was a study done in 2018 by Pew Research Center that says that this is like very, very prominent today. And it's actually on an uptick in interest.
Nice. Yeah, because I could see that being true. I know that like there have been some Christian spaces I've been a part of in the past that have been very like adverse. Like, okay, so I was in this prayer group one time and we were all like kind of growing around and praying. And I remember one of the girls asked, you know, like, hey, I need some prayers for my sister because she started doing yoga. And I remember being like, I don't know if this is the group for me.
Yeah.
I didn't come back. You know, so I feel like there are those groups, like the very extreme ones that are like everything is
no evil.
Nothing is to be trusted. We only need like our rationality and sort of more like the I guess fundamentalist strains where in apologetics, you know, it has to be very trustworthy, it has to be very like based in fact and truth, so which I feel like I am not. I mean, obviously I love knowledge and also very spiritual,
so, I think there's a really healthy way to have that balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think when you get too far into either extreme, it's in general in anything, it never really ends up being great. But according to this study, there's a lot that I think is super interesting. I feel like I have most of this section bolded, so try not to just verbatim read where I'm like, this is so cool. So it says most American adults self-identify as Christians, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But a lot of them also hold these kind of new age characterized beliefs of reincarnation, astrology, physics, psychics, not physics. Fun fact, physics is a new age belief. Just kidding. Psychics and the presence of spiritual energy in physical objects like mountains, trees, crystals, rocks. And most Americans who are not religiously affiliated also have these beliefs. So it's just kind of...
So that seems to be like the overarching umbrella thing that everyone just buys into. Some of these like new age beliefs as opposed to like Christian beliefs.
Which I think... I was thinking about this and I feel like it makes sense because the United States really is this kind of compilation of cultures and locations and histories with all of the people that make up the United States. And I feel like when you have that kind of a blending of culture and religious practice and tradition, you're gonna see appearances of all of these things because they come up in some place at some point and then are passed down throughout family and, lines.
Well, so I've been reading this book called A Multitude of All the Peoples, and the whole, like, I think it's by Vince Bantu. I'll try to link it in the notes. So, essentially he's kind of talking about how Christianity has all, like, in its origins was very diverse. In fact, a lot of that research I mentioned from earlier is from his book. But how Christianity was so diverse, but then how, particularly in westernized countries, in his foreword, he talks about how the uptick in secularism and agnosticism and atheism is almost totally linked to essentially the trauma that people have experienced in the church for years, in the sense of like people are seeing how much Christianity has been abused and used to abuse and oppress people. And so now there's this uprise in sort of secularism and stuff. But I feel like, I mean, not everyone, but it seems like a lot of people, at least we talk to, that maybe don't like the church, they still have a lot of this spiritualist aspect. So they're still kind of looking for some sort of connection.
Right.
And I feel like maybe New Age is what offers that neutral space, because I know at least a lot of people I know who've left the church and maybe are re-experiencing or re-looking at things have always kind of maintained those New Agey, you know, type of beliefs of like connecting through yoga and crystals and meditation, you know, sort of those like grounding things. So
yeah, they talk a bit about how 6 in 10 American adults accept at least one of those beliefs. 4 in 10 believe in psychics, in that objects have spiritual energy, and you have smaller pockets that believe in reincarnation and astrology pretty heavily. But they're not replacing traditional forms of religious practice.
Yeah.
8 in 10 Christians say they believe in God, and 6 in 10 believe in one or more of the 4 New Age beliefs listed there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. 40- That's also interesting that it says 8 in 10 Christians say they believe in God.
I know, right? Well, God as described in the Bible.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes more sense. Well, then.
Yeah.
Okay. That changes it.
So you have like 47% of evangelical Protestants to 7 in 10 Catholics and Protestants in historically Black traditions.
Interesting.
That hold New Age beliefs and believe in God as described in the Bible.
Yeah, so the Protestants are really where we see the lowest acceptance of New Age stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, again, I feel like that makes sense because there are, especially within like the tradition of Catholicism, there's some really cool and really beautiful.
There's a lot of beautiful spiritual practices. I think Martin Luther was pretty anti, like he liked structure. He wanted knowledge. He believed the Bible should be like very much like that should be our guidebook, and scripture should be very heavily focused on. And so he was a little bit more like, let's focus on the knowledge aspect. And so I feel like Protestantism has always just kind of carried that. And I think there's two different extremes. Like I would say, you know, maybe Methodism, there might be a little bit more spirituality than like a fundamentalist church. It might be a little bit more knowledge heavy. So I think it comes in different degrees. But I definitely think I have been shocked the more I learn about Catholicism and belief. I'm like, wow, they believe a lot of really cool spiritual stuff. Like they've held on to some of the mysticism.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful.
And then you see a very similar thing in those who are unaffiliated with any religious tradition. There's a lot of interest energy within physical things and psychics. About 54% of individuals who believe that energy can be housed within physical things believe in psychics.
Mm.
And
makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that that goes along really well. Obviously, there's also the understanding that women are typically more likely to identify mm-hmm. with the religion than men.
Mm-hmm.
And so women tend to be the larger group that subscribe to a lot of these beliefs.
Okay, yeah.
But also, I thought this was interesting. So adults under 65, those who have not graduated from college, racial and ethnic minorities, and Democrats, and those who lean toward the Democratic Party are more likely to hold at least one New Age belief.
Interesting. So adults under 65 have not graduated from college, racial, ethnic minorities, and Democrats. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Because that seems like kind of a wider, yeah. Huh.
It's just a lot more diverse of a group, yeah, which again, yeah. I think speaks yeah, to that.
How wide of yeah. the belief it is. Yeah.
And to some of the colonization that exists within Christianity.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right. Like within that group, there are so many different cultures and beliefs mm-hmm. that would have been kind of existing within families that mm-hmm. then, you know, Christianity yeah. comes in and tells you it doesn't count. So yeah. And all of that, I think what is sticks out to me in all of that research is a lot of the time when you Google like Christians and crystals, you see a lot of overwhelmingly negative discourse around yeah. how they are like somehow anti-Christian to engage mm-hmm. in any of those practices. And I think what I see in that is that there's a lot more room for personal interpretation mm-hmm. For you to kind of discern like what feels like it fits for the practice that you need.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like you can engage with God? Is this something in alignment? Is this something that's not? It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot more room for that conversation than often is found yeah, when you're trying to absolutely. Find discourse. So I want to talk about like some specific practices and how mm-hmm. I think they kind of intertwine mm-hmm. with Christianity. Because there are some things where like, it is like either in scripture that you could make yeah, the argument or absolutely. Whatever, which I think is interesting.
Oh my gosh. Like looking at the Bible, there's so many weird like spiritual things mm-hmm. or like rituals and practices and yeah.
Stuff that you're I'm like, excited. What? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So crystals are probably the thing that is really the most interesting to me because it will be the first to admit that I am a crystal chick. I mm-hmm. believe that they are doing some kind mm-hmm. of work. Now, I don't necessarily know what all of that work is, but I'm willing to trust the rock that it knows what it's doing. And what's interesting is you have kind of this tension in study. So I think it really just comes down to what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
Some studies show that crystals are just a placebo effect, that yeah. you think they're doing something and therefore they do something. In that way, are they not doing something?
Exactly, right?
It might be psychological.
But if that's the tool that helps you get to the headspace.
It does what it does, you yeah. know? And if anything, it's a pretty rock. And who hates pretty rocks? Not me. Mm-hmm. But then there's also a study that show energetic properties and vibrations that are held within crystals mm-hmm. in certain kinds of rocks. And that they do different things based off of their energetic properties. So I think some of the things you see are, you know, like higher confidence levels, a repellent of negativity. So being in a room and trying to keep from assuming someone else's negative energy, attracting certain things into your life. I mean, people have been using yeah. variations of crystals for yeah. thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, there's something to it.
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah.
And also if you think of it, like, a lot of people really highly value like birthstones or mm-hmm. things like that. I mean, there are certain like, what are they called? Like gems, yeah. jewels like yeah. that we use or things like that. Or, you know, I feel like we've always attached different meanings to those things. Mm-hmm. And to me, I feel like we've just become very wary because early Christianity was so against anything pagan and mm-hmm. had like this negativity and sort of honestly, like reversed the persecution, whereas like Christians were being persecuted. And then less than three centuries after that, they flipped the script and were like, we're yeah. going to persecute everyone else. And so, yeah, I just think that why not? I yeah. feel like
Well, and too, it's one of those spaces where like we're so disconnected from
yes.
the world around us mm-hmm. and nature and mm-hmm. the cycles of nature. It's not surprising people don't believe it, but it's also not surprising people mm-hmm. do when you get to actually ground right? yourself in something. Yeah.
Like something kind of yeah. from the earth, mm-hmm. which if we believe God created the earth, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of like really cool things there. Like, I think I've maybe mentioned this when we were talking about our sort of environmental episodes about, I love like Rob Bell, and he has this really cool like video called Everything is Spiritual. And he talks about how like we're all made from the same components, essentially. Like as humans, you know, we have DNA, but we're also all made from like carbon and hydrogen. You know, we all have mm-hmm. a lot of the same elements. And so I feel like there's a lot of beauty in the fact that we have the same elements as like a rock. And,
yeah.
you know, we're all made from like the same things. And I feel like that there can be like a, even if it's just attaching meaning to something and like, you know, praying with it or sitting with it.
Yeah.
I still think it's grounding.
So. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I also love that crystals, they make appearances throughout scripture a lot.
Yeah.
Which is like
okay.
kind of interesting. So the part to me that was the most spicy is that in Exodus, Exodus 39, 8 through 14, if you want to look it up, it talks about the Israelite priests, the clothing that they would wear and how their breastplates had 12 precious stones in them. The stones are ruby, topaz, emerald, garnet, sapphire, diamond, jacinth, agate, amethyst, beryl, onyx, and jasper. And I can just tell you from my limited experience exploring the realm of crystals that almost all of those hold some kind of property mm-hmm. that people use them for today. Mm-hmm. And it also talks about how God had them keep two special stones in their pocket, one meaning light and one meaning protection. And it's believed they probably wore crystals and jewels mm-hmm. outside of that as well. And they kind of use it as a way to connect to God energetically. And so, I mean, yeah. I think that that is really interesting. And at the same time, also makes complete sense because when you are, again, in a space where your connection to the world around you runs yes. so deep anyway, and you're connecting to a God that you believe is specifically housed in a geographical location, mm-hmm. to ground yourself in elements from that location would make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that's really neat.
You also see it in Revelation. So when they're talking about the city in Revelation of, you know, new heaven that will be created, it talks about the materials of the walls being jasper. Mm-hmm. Being adorned with every kind of precious stone, jasper, sapphire, emerald, carnelian, beryl, topaz. There's a ton of them. And then gates made of pearl. Pearl holds special mm-hmm. properties. In Isaiah, you talk about towers made of ruby and shining mm-hmm. gems, walls of precious stones. Like there's a connection yeah. to those.
And the connection of putting those things in the places where the divine exists, like yeah. having those things in the temple, having those things where the priests are, like, I think that that's, I mean, pretty valuable, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Hmm. So.
I love that. Yeah, yeah. I think that's really interesting. Crystals are something that I've kind of yet to get into, but I've also heard lots of different people talk about them, and I'm all for it. I don't think there's anything innately evil about some rocks. All you know, it's really, I don't understand what the, yeah.
It's SpongeBob.
Oh, wait, have you ever seen the Charlie Brown Halloween episode where he's like, I got candy, I got bubblegum, I got a rock. And he like, every house he goes to, like he gets a rock. I got a rock. Okay. I don't know the SpongeBob one.
Oh, it's where they're delivering the Krusty Krab pizza and it's him and Squidward and they come across a boulder. And he's
oh,
like,
yes.
See, the pioneers used to ride these babies for miles. It's not a boulder. It's a rock.
It's a rock. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
Anyway. Oh, wow. Another practice that we see a lot that I also got into over quarantine is tarot and utilizing mm-hmm. tarot cards as a form of meditative prayer practice.
Yes. Yes. You are also the person that's introduced me to tarot.
I'm so honored.
I think that it's really fascinating because this is probably the one that I feel like at least most people would kind of have an adverse maybe reaction to, especially if you've grown up maybe in a more Protestant church or more fundamentalist space. But it's something that sort of the more I've like looked at it, the more I'm like, I see the value in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm by no means a tarot expert. I still have to Google what all the cards mean, but I have loved it in engaging in a different kind of prayer practice. Yeah. I hate most forms of prayer. They like don't work for me. Like I don't have the attention span to just sit and talk in my head, right? Or like pray like that. Journaling drives me nuts and I'm never consistent with it. Reciting prayers is fine, but it sometimes doesn't really feel like it sticks. So I think I need something that is a lot more like active within my brain. And I think this for me has served as a form of what some people refer to as visio divina. So it's like looking at an image, interpreting how that image makes you feel, and then processing that through meditation and prayer. Which I will also say, this happens not just in things like this, but like even when you go to a museum and you're looking at a piece of art that was attempted to convey some kind of religious message, like the goal was that it would evoke a feeling within you. And that you would then process that feeling. And I think that's the same thing in this practice. Like you have artwork on cards. You process how that works for you. So it is a space where there are some places and practices that use it as a form of divination. I can see how you would use it that way, but you don't have to. I think one of the kind of things for me that I had to actively work on that I ended up really appreciating once I did is remembering that it's not the thing itself that is problematic. It's the use of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just like our alcohol episode, it's not alcohol itself that's bad. It's whether or not, you know, it's your relationship to alcohol. And it's your relationship to all things. All things could be good or bad. It's just kind of our use of it. Relationship to it.
And that's also not to say that like if you use it for divination, like I'm not naming anything as bad. I think just that's the stereotype that you're given, is that this thing is bad. And it's just some cards I ordered on Amazon. It's not like I had to go and like do a whole thing to get them. So but usually what I'll do is like kind of go through some kind of prayer or reflection, or like think of something that I'm really trying to process through, pull a few cards, evaluate both the meaning of those cards kind of historically and how they make me feel in the moment, and then sit with that and process through that a little bit to see what comes out of it. And yeah, what I've also found cool is like the dialogue that it begins to open up, not just between like myself and myself, but even myself and others in conversation around like what they saw and how that makes them feel and those sorts of things. It ends up being a pretty cool like meditative prayer practice.
Yeah, it is. I know like you've done some readings for me, and as we like sit and talk about it, I feel like I will have like a lot of revelations or things where it's like, wow, I didn't realize that I need to process that. And then it gives me a lot to really think of like in my prayer time, in my personal sort of like meditative, like how I'm relating to God and what God is speaking to me. So yeah, I feel like it has been a very powerful whenever, you know, I've done that with you. I haven't ever sort of like done it by myself because I'm just not very knowledgeable in it. But I know for myself, like as I've sat there and I was maybe a little, I definitely wasn't skeptical. I just didn't know what to expect. You know, I had zero expectations and I was very blown away with how very connected it did make me feel to God.
There's also, I mean, there is like the yoga meditation space too that like
I'm all for.
I love yoga.
Yep.
I need to be meditating more.
Same.
I like, I don't.
Every time I do it, I feel so good and connected and feel like I learn things. I see more where God is in my life. And I don't meditate enough.
No. I got to learn to make my brain stop running so fast. So I probably just need to be doing it more. But, one that's really, really interesting to me, and then, you know, the rest of it is just kind of whatever all though, is ancestral altars. This one I like, I haven't done any, I've been just generally looking into it. I have no real feeling towards it either way. Although I do think one of the things I'm starting to see more and more that I see as a value is some kind of connection to your ancestry and ancestral healing and kind of the genetic realities of passing along trauma and those sorts of things. And so I do think that there is, you know, probably a space for this. But we have really interesting relationship to this one in Christianity. So typically ancestral altars, it looks different in a variety of cultures, especially like non-Western culture. But it, I mean, you see different iterations of this all the time. And it's really kind of this space of being able to pay homage to honor, or for some people to worship your ancestors or those who have passed on or gone before you. I think often it's really this idea that even though our ancestors have passed on, they're still with us, kind of nudging, guiding, and protecting us as we navigate this life. And so it's a way to honor and to respect them. And one of the ways that this kind of came up in some of the research was a reflection of colonialism, especially within African Christian traditions, in particular, that have spaces where you see this merging of culture and Christianity, and there being an homage to ancestry that is more integrated in those Christian practices. But what I think is interesting is you see people who talk about just like blanket ancestral altars, and there's a resistance to it because it must be a cult or pagan or whatever. And then people will turn around and either be in a tradition that actively honors the saints or has like All Saints Day once a year, where you acknowledge those who have passed on, you light a candle for them on an altar, and you do or repeat or engage in a liturgy that is literally an ancestral altar. And just the concepts of the saints in general, right? That when someone passes on within Christianity, they step into eternal life with Christ, and therefore we can still have a spiritual relationship with our loved ones, that they never leave us, that they're still with us. Like all of that is the same thing.
Yes. I feel like a lot of it is just the way we talk about it, because the second you say ancestral altar, a lot of people are going to like back out and you know, panic. But yeah, I feel like the ways you talk about it, like really, it really, in a lot of ways, is the same thing, or has a lot of overlap, or I think a lot of room, especially because like, I mean, you kind of mentioned a second ago about sort of like colonialism and kind of how we need to decolonize aspects of faith, because also within that book, Multitudes of All the People, he talks about how like really as Christianity, we're kind of at this place where we need to, we have to start decolonizing. We need to make room for separating sort of whiteness, Western identity from Christianity. And because they've become so like entangled, and colonialism doesn't help that, Constantine didn't help that. And now we're in this space where we really need to leave room for like indigenous expression within the communities of like how they can merge. Like there is room for Christianity to merge with sort of what your cultural identity is, what your certain practices are, instead of it just being one very specific way of how we have to understand Christianity, which I think is just such a valuable conversation, because I think Christianity has become so uniform. We've left zero room for there to be exploring and like mysticism and stuff like that.
To all of that, I completely agree. And I think one of the things that also really gets me in this, especially within what I've come to understand as the engagement of the saints within Catholicism. Now, obviously, I'm not Catholic, so I'm not going to say that this is for sure what it is. But my understanding of that is in some ways often considered ancestral worship, although it's not supposed to be. Because it's this idea that those who have passed on are right next to Christ, right? So if you can get them to advocate on your behalf to God, you're probably going to get a lot further than if you try to communicate to God. So you pray to your saint to talk to God for you. So you maintain a relationship with your saint in order to then engage with, which is literally kind of the same. It's like the same concept.
And so then it's sort of like your spiritual ancestry, or like forefathers or whatever.
Or like the saints as they're listed as like Mary or something, like engaging with Christ. And so it's to me, I'm like, it's so similar that like decolonization is vital, because you don't want to I feel like it is better to be engaging in a tradition where you understand all the pieces of it, mm-hmm. Versus engaging in something, but then villainizing something else. And it's the yes. exact same thing.
Yeah. And well, that's where I can see like that Pew Research study coming mm-hmm. into play, because when we talk about that, it's like, yeah, of course. What was it? Like 8 out of 10 Catholics have yeah. like some sort of New Age beliefs. And then it's only like 47% Protestant. Like that's where I could really see that playing out is like, yes, I think, Catholics would be a little more on board with some of that stuff, whereas Protestants who are already very adverse to Catholic, like have just right. a beef with Catholicism would never. That would be like fire on the or gasoline on the fire.
Right.
If you're like, well, but Catholics, and they're like, well, that's why we can't do it, you know? Yeah. But that's where I think we really need to like rethink that, yep. decolonize it, figure
yes.
it out.
Yes mm-hmm. to all the things. Mm-hmm. And I think really that's kind of the big root of where we go from here, you know, is mm-hmm. I think for everyone individually, any practice that you engage into your spiritual practice, there is potential for there to be room for it and for it mm-hmm. to kind of fit. But I think everyone has to discern what that is for themselves. So yeah. if there's something that you're curious about, I think doing research on yes. your own is huge. Mm-hmm. Figure out exactly what it is that you are curious about. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, evaluate if it feels like there's a space for it.
Yeah.
Based off your understanding of the beliefs that you hold. Navigate that, especially with the understanding that there are a lot of practices that are appropriated. Mm-hmm. So like yoga, for example, like what iterations of yoga are more neutral and what yeah. iterations are coming from a specific system of belief that we are just kind of making trendy.
Yes, absolutely. So we need to be so careful that we're not like culturally appropriating things such as... you know, we can't strip all of the spirituality away from yoga because it was such like a spiritual practice. I had a professor that would always kind of talk about like, you know, Christians and yoga or like westernized people, like the Western world doing yoga and how it is this like spiritual thing. So you shouldn't just use it as this like workout opportunity and figuring out, you know, what is the line between making sure we're not culturally appropriating something just because it fits us and we want it, mm-hmm. But also figuring out making sure we're knowledgeable on it, making sure that we're doing well with it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be true of any of these things is figuring out, you know, doing your research on astrology, doing your research on mm-hmm. crystals and all these things and sort of like what fits for you, but also making sure that we're not doing as Christians have done and just stripping the things that suit us.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think just remembering it's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
And you can not come to a conclusion on anything and still be knowledgeable about it. And yes, I think that absolutely. That is really helpful also.
Mm-hmm. Maybe none of these things suit you.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's interesting to see and kind of fun to see all of the ways that faith and practice can look and yes. the ways that we can make it something that suits us and fits our needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
Awesome.
All our witchy friends.
Stay witchy.
So grateful you're here.
Yeah.
Make sure that you follow us mm-hmm. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Instagram. Mm-hmm.
At Oh God Pod.
Yes, mm-hmm. at Oh God Pod everywhere. You can also find links to everything on our website. So after the episode, if you're ever looking for sources or wanting to go deeper into things, we have pages for the mm-hmm. episodes up mm-hmm. on the website, ohgodpod.com. So check those out.
Absolutely.
And share this with someone that yeah, you think might be interested.
Absolutely. Share it with someone who you think would want to listen, who's trying to like figure out what they believe and why. Leave us a rating.
Yes.
Give us some rating and reviews on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you're looking for to continue the conversation, we have a Patreon. We have yep. a Discord where we continue these conversations and talk with one another. And you can join for as little as $1 a month just to have access to those group chats and community calls where we get to call each other once a month. And so if you're interested in that, check that out.
Yeah.
You can also find that on our website. So
yeah. We want to stay connected to you. We yes. want you to be able to stay connected to community.
Yes.
And to engage in a conversation. So yeah, we're glad you're here.
Yes. Thank you.
We love you so
you're
much.
You're doing great.
Have such a great week.
Okay, bye.
Maddie and Reeves are both faith leaders, and the following conversation reflects their standings and beliefs, not those of their place of employment. Thank you.